Good evening. Nice to see you, Kyle.
Nice to see you, too.
You too, Samia. And you. Well, you all, it's the very last chapter. Uchiyama Roshi's discussion of the cook's instructions to the cook. He goes far, far out of the kitchen, and he goes deep, deep into the kitchen. So it's been very helpful on many levels. This one, chapter 14, is called Throwing Your Life into the Abode of the Buddha. Throwing your life, hurling your life. That's quite a challenge, actually. And yet, when we sow, we say plunging into the ocean of Buddha with each stitch. The needle goes in, it's a plunge, and then we pull it out through the fabric into the ocean of Buddha, and then back in again, over and over. It's not a one-time thing. It goes on forever. And it really is meaning simply practice. And practice not in some elaborate way, but practice all the time as you yourself. Not somebody else or somebody you think you ought to be or think you should be. So often we get caught in what Coben called the should be kind of thing. Should have done that. I should be like that. When we see already that we're not. And if we're really honest, that often we never will be. It's a very humbling practice. It's a very honest practice. On Kokyo had a thing on Facebook today about his teacher, who is Suki, what's his name? Suki Nima, who is a Tibetan teacher, who has great esteem among Western students. And his suggestion, if you really want to plunge into the practice of the abode of Buddha and the practice, that you set aside a day, a week, and turn off everything and just stay in this in silence and do whatever practices you have. And that you sit at least an hour every day, no matter what. Or you said, otherwise you're just gliding along on the surface and you're not, it's fine, but you're not going anywhere. In Zen we have sesshin, where we actually plunge in for a week and commit to silence and commit to sitting all day long from morning to night. That's one way, but that's a way that's not always available to everybody. But there is a way for anybody to turn off the machinery that is crowding our life and our brains for a day, if not every single week, at least as often as we possibly can, and simply enjoy the silence. Just listening is a kind of Buddha experience all by itself. Just dropping the projection of ourself, the speed of trying to reach something, and simply retreat and breathe and be. That's what Uchiyama Roshi is talking about here. But he starts out talking about his practice, which is as quirky as usual and very busy. He talks about how busy he is, and I recognize it because it used to be my life too, going from sesshin to sesshin and traveling a lot and never having any rest, really just sitting and sitting and sitting and talking and talking and talking, giving Dharma talks and meeting people face to face. But he gave himself 3 little shots of whiskey every night to get him through. He says, it wasn't for anything. It was just to keep my feet warm, he said. Otherwise, my feet are cold, so I need that whiskey. He was a very funny guy. He said it wasn't a luxurious life at Antaiji, but he had grown accustomed to taking the whiskey straight to maximize its effect. You can just see him kicking back. And then he says at the same time he did not live his life to have fun. He talks about seeking pleasure and happiness. And I think in every life there is a seeking of pleasure and happiness. That's how we know what unpleasure and unhappiness is. We have experience, and there are ones we like, we want more of. We feel a whole lot better if the endorphins are working in our body than if they're not. But his suggestion is that those little shots of happiness and pleasure are so limited and don't last. And then we're back in a kind of no person's land again. Either down, so it's down and up and down and up and down and up without much meaning. At least in his view, he sees that the Japanese world that he's in is very much about gaining happiness and gaining renown and gaining all the things that human beings seem to want, lots of money and lots of attention and lots of importance and all of those things. And he said it's not what he would call having a passion for life. But if you're passionate for life, it's a whole different kind of mind from that up and down of always charging forward and trying to find the best tasting things and the most exciting things and the most wonderful things and the most, etc. He says it's teddy bears and electric trains when we're children, and then we get older and it's bicycles, watches, cameras, and finally jewelry, clothes, and the opposite sex, which drives us. More, more, give me more. He says they're all toys. Of course, he was a monk from the very, very early age. And so his understanding of human life, I think, is limited by that, just as our life is limited in knowing what a monk's life is like. And so some of this, I think, we need to look at carefully in thinking about how we live, because it's important to pay very close attention to how we manage to be stable and secure in our life and how we live. So we don't need to throw away pleasure, in my view. Pleasure is one of the ways that leads us to the Dharma. There's real joy in reading Uchiyama Roshi, and that leads us on in our mind in many different ways that are very beneficial. So the important thing is to know and to study what it is that really benefits our mind and our life. You could say where our joy lies, or where our passion resides in us. And then go for it. And that's what he's saying here too, to go for it. Don't try to substitute the should be kind of things in order to look better or feel more proper or more acceptable. There's no acceptability kind of thing either, really. So, so he quotes Shoji, which is the life and death chapter of Shobo Genzo, of Dogen. He takes up, Uchiyama Roshi says, he takes up the problem of the relationship between life and death. He says, in a sense, this chapter is a condensation of all his teachings. The following passage represents the essence of that chapter. And this is the quote. Let go of and forget your body and mind. Throw your life into the abode of the Buddha, living by being moved and led by the Buddha. When you do this without relying on your own physical or mental power, you become released from both life and death and become a Buddha. Do not immerse yourself in mental and emotional struggles. Refrain from committing evil. Neither be attached to life nor to death. Be compassionate toward all sentient beings. Revere that which is superior, and do not withhold sympathy from that which is inferior. Do not harbor hatreds nor covet anything. Do not be overly concerned with trivial matters, nor grieve over difficulties in your life. This is the Buddha. Do not search for the Buddha anywhere else. This is real good advice. And Uchiyama Roshi then analyzes it somewhat in a way that interests me. He says, when I first read this passage while I was a student, I felt very strong resistance to it. I thought that revere that which is superior and do not withhold sympathy from that which is inferior meant to respect the wealthy and pity the poor, or to defer to those in high positions and be paternalistic toward those in low ones. And then he said, I used to think that Dogen Zenji was one more member of the aristocracy and age of class distinctions. And then the years changed his understanding, he says. He said, I do not see people with money, nor those who are in high positions, as being superior, nor do I view people as inferior simply because they are materially poor and hold no particular position. Although I no longer see this passage the way I did when younger, I've come to see that there is superior and inferior in a completely different sense. He says, I think that spiritual teachers who have genuinely striven to develop and refine their lives and the life of the world around them, in addition to those who have years of rich experiences and are willing to share them with others, ought to be revered. On the other hand, we cannot but be naturally sympathetic and understanding toward the sick and the aged who are no longer able to get around for themselves. I do not believe, as I once did, that everything ought to be equal. To talk of dividing the wealth and necessities of the earth equally sounds too hollow and abstract. I think he's missing Dogen's point here. And it's interesting, because he's so concerned about how people are living their lives, Uchiyama, I mean, that he sees those who are living their lives without sympathy. He thinks they ought not to be doing that. And so he's making that same distinction that Dogen is talking about not making. That don't withhold sympathy from that which is inferior. So even though you see that people are living maybe useless or hopeless or mistaken lives, still sympathy belongs extremely much with everybody. Not picking and choosing. And Dogen says, doesn't say, don't be concerned with trivial matters. He says, don't be overly concerned with trivial matters. Big difference. Of course we have trivial matters. We stub our toe, it's trivial, but it hurts. So of course. So I think it's important not to get too special about practice, but just be sensible. Passionately sensible, maybe you could say. Or sincere and honestly sensible. And acknowledge our triviality when we're trivial, and actually acknowledgement actually helps tremendously in how we can navigate our life. When we know what we're doing, we can know much better what to do and how to do it. Then he goes on to talk about forgetting your body and mind. Throw your life into the abode of the Buddha, living by being moved and led by the Buddha. He said, I could never figure out just what the abode of the Buddha was supposed to mean. There's a special kind of life into which we throw our bodies and minds. But how would we know how to do that? And if it's my own power, how can that be Buddha's power? So he says, when I look back upon it now, it seems to me that the error in my thinking was to assume that there existed some sort of place separate from myself into which I had to throw my body and mind. Actually, however, the abode of the Buddha is nothing other than our own lives. Consequently, there is no refuge or special place outside the life of our true self, nor anything apart from the activities of that self. But he has a capital on the S of the self in here. And so it's important to realize that we often narrow our concept of ourself to a very, very small shape. And that what he's pointing to is something much more profound. It's the life of us. Bigness, the incomprehensible bigness of us and complexity of us. It includes all the causes and conditions that go together to make each moment of what we call me. Because it's so complicated, that's why this idea of body and mind falling off is that our identification with this that we call me is very limited. And if we catch a view of how big and how complex and how constantly shifting and changing this is, then we have some view of the self of the self, you could say, of the hugeness of the great powers that live through all things, so that we don't need to completely orchestrate our life, but to follow it, to go with it. Proceed, as the Quakers say, as way opens, and follow the way of it. And as I always say, be surprised instead of having such a tight focus and an absolute view that can't hardly get anywhere. He said, the true self, capital S, includes the entire world in which it lives. Therefore, there is nothing that's not a part of it. Everything encountered is life. To devote ourselves to everything we encounter and throw our life force into doing just that is quite different from simply exhausting our energies playing with toys. Here is where our passion for life as joyful mind manifests the significance of being alive. Then he quotes Sawaki Roshi, who used an expression that he emphasized a great deal. Gain is delusion, loss is enlightenment. And Uchiyama Roshi says, as I have mentioned in various ways throughout this commentary, the way of life of one living the Buddha Dharma is, at the most fundamental level, just living the life of the self, without searching outside oneself for anything, for something. No gain, no loss, no enlightenment, no delusion. In our daily lives, if we live fully aware of the most fundamental reality, which is that our lives are everything we encounter, that everything which befalls us is our true self, then it has to become obvious that, practically speaking, gaining is delusion and losing is enlightenment. And he finishes by saying, the fundamental spirit or attitude of the bodhisattvas who vow to actually practice not for their own benefit alone, but for the benefit of all sentient beings. We have to understand that through making every effort for the prosperity of the community, one revitalizes one's own character. And to know that endeavoring to succeed and to surpass the patriarchs, the ancestors of past generations, means to learn from their lives and to value their examples. So it doesn't mean to try to get rich. Though Chogyam Trungpa always advised his students to go out and get a really good job and build a big house and just show how great the Dharma is. That if people could see how happy and how successful they were, they would want to study the Dharma too and know what Buddha said. So there's a whole nother way of looking at this that is also interesting to examine. So are there questions? Thank you, Uchiyama. Thank you, Dogen. Wendy?
Yes, but tonight it seemed like you were emphasizing joy and passion, meeting what comes your way. And I remember a couple of months ago you told us that Zen was not about joy. Zen was about equanimity. That equanimity was...
It's both.
Okay.
Has to be. And joy is not the same as giddy happiness either. There are lots of ways of defining it, but in my mind, joy is a much quieter and deeper thing than la-la happy.
But it's pleasurable. It's pleasure.
Yeah, pleasure. I guess so, but it's a different kind of pleasure. It's not a self-fulfilling pleasure, I think, joy. You can feel tremendously deep joy for somebody else. In fact, mostly that's where joy is coming from. You hear some story from someone and you just can't help but feel a deep happiness for that person or that situation. I think there's a difference.
We're all talking about following your passion. That implies an action that is satisfying to you.
Absolutely, and that's what he's talking about, is to find what your life is meant to be and do it.
But that won't necessarily involve other people. Other people's happiness?
Well, I think the implication is that it's in terms of practice, and if you're practicing, that it will. Because that's what practice is about. That it's coming from a very deep place in oneself. So it's not a self-serving kind of thing at all.
So, like people that like to make music or explore their creativity, that's not self-serving, that's offering it to other people.
It can be either one. So he's pointing in a certain direction, but anybody can go either way. So Dogen says, don't do bad things. And it seems like real good advice. So I think if we talk about joy or happiness, that it comes much more often and more with more satisfaction if we're doing it for others. Invariably, it's how we're made.
I don't know what, you know, what goes on in the minds of great artists, not being one of them. An author.
No, we don't know. But you do know what's going on in your mind. That's what this is about.
Well, I'll have to reflect on all of this right now. I'm just confused. Mm-hmm. About, you know, taking what comes your way, or going, sitting in a corner in your room in silence.
For a day?
Yeah, a day's a long time.
It is. It's a wonderful discipline. Jeffrey?
To continue this conversation, reflecting on what we're talking about, for myself, I can find a smile just appears on my face when this joy we're trying to talk about is connected with contentment and gratitude. Mm-hmm. And that smile you may have experienced today when you went out and you saw that, just the weather.
Mm-hmm.
An opportunity to get out and look at the early blossoms on certain trees or something like that. That's joy.
I mean,
working in my yard, mm-hmm. you know, that's joy. I also find in the practice, as we work through certain hindrances that no longer are a hindrance, there's a joy to that as well.
Yes.
That the practices had that kind of karmic effect.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, I have to say, it's not worldly joy. It's a spiritual joy.
Yes.
Which, you know, and it's a redefinition, I think, from, at least that's what I've discovered in my life. It's not connected to the kind of description for worldly pleasure, I suppose, is the word
mm-hmm.
I'm looking for, which is, as we all know, is just like this, you know.
Yes.
Trough.
Yes.
Up here, trough. Up here.
Exactly.
So yeah, I think that's where I'm at with that part of the discussion here with joy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's my problem. I didn't get my walk in today. That was what I was looking forward to. Overwhelmed with trivia.
Well, yes.
Well, and that's thank you very much, because I think that's part of the practice too, is you provide yourself with the space for those kind of moments, whatever it is. If it's taking a moment to look out at Mount Um, if it's a moment to pay attention to the crows or a bird circling overhead or whatever, and that's that quality of being ardent, because that, you know, is where the joy comes from. It's not sitting there scratching your head and wondering if that BMW would really give you all the pleasure that the ads indicate. And that's, you know, that's where so many people get caught up in.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, that's my two cents.
That's beautifully said, Jeffrey. You left out the robins. The robins have come to town.
They've been playing in my fountain, so.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
Making a racket, too. Messing up the sidewalks.
We have this little cat on our block that has made our block its home, and we call him Mr. Pants. And it's an orange tabby. And he makes friends, or she makes, we're not quite sure what the cat is, a male or female, but it just comes along and makes friends with everybody. And it did something about 5 days ago that I couldn't believe. It was in the morning, I caught it taking this like toboggan rides down the windshield of my VW. And I was just so stunned to see it. And it clambered back up and then just go right down. I was having the best time. Anyway.
No scratch marks?
Yeah, no scratch marks. Just going down with its pads.
That was good.
That's joy.
Yes.
Joy doesn't mean being happy all the time. It doesn't mean everything being good all the time or getting what you want. It doesn't mean any of those things. It means being with things as they're happening and being glad to be alive, to feel life going through us, whatever is happening. And just accepting it for what it is. And being glad that there's a tomorrow. We can get up and take a walk tomorrow or do whatever we didn't get to do today. It's never an end point until we fall off the edge. So, and we haven't done that yet, so enjoy. Well, it's after 8. Well, we should stop. What a nice thing to end on. Thank you. A minute sit.